This is Between the Lines, WMUK's weekly look at books and writers. I'm Zinta A-Stars. In 1805 and 1806, former Vice President Aaron Burr traveled through the Trans-Appalachian West, gathering support for a mysterious enterprise. He was arrested and tried for treason in 1807. Was he guilty? Or was he the victim of a conspiracy theory? Kalamazoo College history professor James E. Lewis introduces us to Aaron Burr and talks about his new book, The Burr Conspiracy, uncovering the story of an early American crisis.
Aaron Burr was a very fascinating figure. He had a very prominent family. He was connected to people who had been the president of Princeton University, for example. So he is well-connected. If you think of sort of the person, the classic person to counterpose him against is Alexander Hamilton, who, of course, he killed in a duel in the summer of 1804. And Hamilton's parentage was very uncertain. His parents weren't married. He'd come from the Caribbean. Burr is the exact opposite. He comes from a good family line. Now, his parents die when he's very young. He's left with uncles, but they are still well-connected, New England family. He's prominent in the Revolution. He leads something that we don't think we ever did, but we did. We invaded Canada in 1775, and he's a part of that expedition against Canada. And he rises to colonel in the Revolution. And then he's a lawyer in New York. He becomes very active in New York state politics in the 1790s and really helps to turn New York City in particular, but New York State to some extent, toward the party of Jefferson, the Republican Party or Democratic Republican Party. And that activity gets him on the ticket in the election of 1800, and he is Jefferson's running mate. And he and Jefferson run for presidency and vice presidency. Because the Constitution set up a different system than the one we know now, they actually ended up being tied with each other in the Electoral College. And the system was that the person with the most electoral votes is president, and the second most electoral votes becomes vice president. But they were tied.
I was going to ask you about that because I found that fascinating,
yeah.
The Electoral College, and quite different than how we elect presidents and vice presidents today. So if you can elaborate on that a little bit more.
Well, the election of 1800 is the reason we have the system we have now, because the result of the election of 1800 was to plunge the nation into a crisis. Who would become president? Everybody knew who was supposed to be president. Jefferson knew he was supposed to be president. The public knew that Jefferson was supposed to be president. The electors knew that Jefferson was supposed to be president. But the system really hadn't produced that result. And the opposition party, the Federalists, the party of Hamilton, were not at all certain they wanted Jefferson to be president. They were afraid Jefferson would destroy the country, would destroy the Union, would wreck all of the things that George Washington and Hamilton had done over the preceding 12 years. And very seriously considered the idea of electing Burr as the president. Going into Burr's vice presidency, there was already some very bad blood between him and his party and the person he was supposed to be partnered with as president and vice president. And then they never really recovered. And it was very clear by 1804, when the next presidential election came around, that there was going to be no room for Burr, the presidential ticket, that he was not going to be the vice president this time out. And so he moved out of national politics. Even as he is still vice president, he decides he's going to run for governor of New York. He decides that he's willing to court the Federalists in New York, the party of Hamilton, in order to win the election. And this is where all of the background for the duel with Hamilton comes up. Hamilton works against that election, and Burr does not win. Kills Hamilton in the summer of 1804, goes back to Washington to be vice president, to finish out his term as vice president, and that's wrapped up by March of 1805. And that's really where the sort of kickoff for what would become the Burr conspiracy, or be talked about as the Burr conspiracy, is the sense that here's a man with tremendous ambition who has been in the second highest office in the land and is now tremendously frustrated, and what is he going to do next? He starts looking at his options, but people start worrying about these ambitions. Then how are we going to contain them? How are we going to check them? And what might he be imagining that he could do to satisfy them?
This is Between the Lines on WMUK. I'm Zinta Astars. I'm speaking with historian and author James E. Lewis.
The book is called The Burr Conspiracy. There have been many other books called The Burr Conspiracy, or some variation of that over the years. But The Burr Conspiracy should not be understood as... I'm not saying that I know that there was a conspiracy that Burr was at the head of to do something illegal. I called the book The Burr Conspiracy, and I used the term The Burr Conspiracy throughout the book, because that's what everybody has always called it. Or at the time, and maybe this should have been the title of the book, people called it Burr's Conspiracy. There was a tendency to personalize things.
Uh-huh.
So that was the language of the day. That's not a language I'm assigning to it. But nobody really knows. Nobody knows whether there was a conspiracy. It is clear that Burr was in contact with various men, that he was telling them stories about what he intended to do, that he was expressing these grand plans, that he had people that I think we can safely describe as his agents who were acting for him, meeting with people in other places, getting men together, buying provisions, or making contracts for provisions. He was traveling around and having boats built to use on the Ohio and Mississippi rivers. He was contracting for provisions. He was sending some letters. We don't know how many because we don't know how many have been lost or destroyed, that people didn't want something that might implicate them that they weren't comfortable with. So there is something, we're pretty sure, but we don't know what the content of it was. We don't know what the direction of it was. But we know that Burr was a part of it. And we know that there were other men that he was talking with and working with, many of whom, as things started to blow up, as it became clear that the public was worried and the president was worried, many of whom wrote letters to the president, wrote letters to other members of the administration, wrote letters to newspapers, and said, yes, I had talked with him, and here's what he said, and you know, wanted to distance themselves from this thing.
There's a little bit in there about manipulation of the facts, a little play with those letters.
Yeah. Jefferson is very clear in a very important message that he sends to Congress in January of 1807 of the timing of when he learned about this. He says that in the September and October of 1806, I started to receive letters and other members of the cabinet started to receive letters warning about this. And the reality is he had received letters warning him about Burr and the conspiracy, but they really dated back to February of 1806, 6 or 8 months earlier. And he had wanted to conceal that from the public. Because if he said, I've known about this for a year and I started acting on it 2 months ago, that's hard to explain. And he knew it'd be hard to explain. If he said, I've been acting on this really since October when we started having cabinet meetings, we had just found out about this. That makes a lot more sense, right? So that's the story he tells. And it's amazingly the story he sticks to long after his presidency, all the way up till 4 or 5 years before he dies. He's still telling that story, even though in the interim, very shortly after the message, the man who had sent him the earliest warning said, I was sending you letters all through the spring of 1806. I was on the ground in Kentucky. He was at the district attorney in Kentucky. This is just a lie. And he prints these letters for everybody to read.
I'm Zinta Astars. You've been listening to WMUK's Between the Lines, our weekly look at books and writers. I've been speaking with James E. Lewis, the author of The Burr Conspiracy, Uncovering the Story of an Early American Crisis. Visit WMUK.org to hear more of our conversation. And join us every Tuesday at this time for Between the Lines. Thanks for listening.